You're listening to KSCO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me. Bob Spitz returns to the show this week. He's the author of several books, including a memoir and excellent biographies of Bob Dylan, the Beatles, and Julia Child. His new book is the story of a man who became president of the United States. After launching his political career from a hit television show, he based a lot of his political platform on fringe ideas he got from tabloids, frequently lying and exaggerating. And after he became president, he continued to lie. He did possibly illegal things, but somehow his admirers failed to be dissuaded. The man's name, and the name of Bob Spitz's new book, is Reagan. Bob Spitz, welcome back to From the Bookshelf.
Gary, always pleased to talk to you.
You know, when we first spoke back in 2005, when your Beatles book was published, I asked you why you wanted to write a book about the Beatles, because I think it was the 24,000th Beatles book that had been published. And you had a really good answer. You had a very good answer, and it was people could listen back to that one on my archive and hear why. So now I'm going to ask you, why did you want to write a book about Ronald Reagan, Reagan, An American Journey?
Well, it would probably be identical to my answer about the Beatles. You know, there have been, 200-300 books written about Reagan. And I think that most of them were either, hagiography or political tracks or very wonky or one-sided. And I felt that he needed a complete, definitive biography that was, had someone who was open-minded and not brought any bias to bear. And I think we're also far enough away from Reagan's presidency that we can reevaluate it in a way that hasn't been done before. And so I really set out to create the definitive biography of Ronald Reagan.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you ever vote for Ronald Reagan?
No, actually, I didn't vote for him twice. And if I'm going to be completely honest, I should admit that I don't think I've ever voted for a Republican in my life. It was an odd project for me. It was something that my wife suggested when we had been looking for another subject for me. And it was really difficult because when it came time to work on a new book, I wanted it to be meaningful. And my wife said, you know, there are two elements in all of your books that just flow through everything, and that is, number one, your subject is beloved, and number two, they've changed the culture. And when we sat down and tried to draw up a list of people who met those criteria, it was almost impossible. I spent about 6 months going through the Kennedy Center honorees and the Medal of Honor people. And she said to me, what about Ronald Reagan? And, for all the reasons that I just gave you, I said, absolutely not. But the more we thought about it, Reagan's life, first of all, fit those two elements that I mentioned. And secondly, his life was really fantastic. It encompassed the entire 20th century. It draws us through the early days of broadcasting, in the Midwest, the early days and the golden years of Hollywood, America's rise to conservatism, and of course, politics. And so, here it was on a platter for me, a presidential biography, and I found myself saying yes.
Do you feel that while you were writing Reagan, An American Journey, Bob Spitz, that you were seduced by Ronald Reagan?
Oh, not at all. You know, it's really funny. People ask me if I would have voted for him now after all this. And the answer is no, because I disagree with his policies. But what I did find is that I came to admire him as a man. And I came to admire him for his leadership abilities, his dedication to America, and I think in light of what we're seeing today, you can say that Reagan really cared about the American people. He, whether we agreed with his policies or not, he set out to do the right thing for the country, what he thought was the right thing for the country, not for himself.
Now, in my introduction, I drew some similarities between him and our current president, obviously. And those things are very real. I mean, do you think he sort of set the stage for our current political environment?
Well, you know, I think he brought a lot of elements into it that have repercussions on what we're seeing today. You know, all of a sudden, politics became very divisive. Ken Duberstein, who was Reagan's fourth chief of staff, and coincidentally, my camp counselor when I was a boy, told me that during the Reagan administration, one of the highlights for him was that you could, have dinner afterwards with your Democratic colleagues and reach across the aisle and go out to dinner and play cards together. And he also told me that if that happened today, that you could probably lose your job. However, he did acknowledge that it began to seep into our culture during Reagan's administration that there was a them and us sensibility about Republicans and Democrats, and the chasm just seemed to widen and widen and grow deeper and darker. So I guess in that sense you could really stem that from the Reagan administration. Also, Reagan was the first person to bring abortion and religion into politics. And that also caused a bit of divide stemming from the 1980s. So, blame him if you'd like. But I think he also did a lot of things as president that can be admired. And as I said before, certainly his leadership abilities.
And I want to talk about, I mean, your book is a long book that tells a full life, and he was only president for 8 years. But let's just talk a little bit more about the political part before we get back to Hollywood, which is so,
sure. You
treated that so well in the book. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love this book. I didn't love Ronald Reagan, but I love the book.
Well, that's my goal, Gary. That's exactly what I was hoping for.
Well, you're one of the people who wrote a little blurb on the back of your book is John Meacham. And he wrote a sort of a similar book about George Bush, George H.W. Bush. I wasn't a huge Bush fan either, and yet his book convinced me that George Bush was a person who had his heart in the right place and believed in the things that he was doing for the good of the country, even if I didn't politically agree. And I think that's what you were doing in this book, and you did it well. But you do present Ronald Reagan as a very much a man making his own decisions in the White House, despite the fact that, it wasn't in your book, but that famous moment when he doesn't understand the question and Nancy is standing next to him and she said, "We're doing everything we can." And he says, "We're doing everything we can." But you don't think he was a puppet of other individuals.
No, I don't think Reagan was a puppet. From all the research that I did, I think that Reagan realized he was not a very complex individual, and that often he didn't grasp a lot of the political context. And so what he did, and I think this is one of his great qualities, is that he hired terrific people, experts, who could advise him. If you look at his cabinet, well, most of his cabinet at least, and his foreign advisors, Reagan's people were really notable authorities, unlike what we're seeing today. And he listened to them. He wasn't afraid to take their advice. And I think that's really one of Reagan's greatest attributes, that he hired great people and wasn't afraid to admit he was wrong. But then, as you said, he made up his mind, and once he made up his mind, he stuck to it.
Let's talk about how he came to be a political person in the first place. So he, because he was an actor, will you tell us, he was an actor, and how did that How did he become a liberal head of the Screen Actors Guild into a conservative Republican president?
Well, listen, Reagan had grown up being a Franklin Delano Roosevelt fanatic. His dad was a Democrat in a completely Republican town, and Reagan, father and son, really took pride in the fact that they were different, that they were liberals. When, in fact, he was an actor in Hollywood, it coincided with a really dark time in Hollywood when, of course, there was the blacklist, a lot of communist infiltration in many of the organizations that were attached to Hollywood and the actors' groups. And Reagan started to move to the right. He detested the fact that communists had embedded themselves in the Democratic Party and that progressivism had kind of entwined with communism. And so to separate himself, he started skewing to the right. And by the time, you know, he had moved out of Hollywood and started working for General Electric, the transformation was complete. There's also another really funny instance that made him move to the right. When he was in the Army during his Hollywood days, he was in the service, and he was stationed in of all places in Hollywood, making documentary films for training purposes. He had read where during World War I, the servicemen who came out of World War I were forgiven their taxes. So Reagan decided not to pay his taxes, thinking, of course, the same thing will happen when World War II is over, and he was wrong. And all of a sudden, he was slapped with a bill for $96,000 in back taxes. And that made him start to feel that Uncle Sam and big government was reaching into his pocket. And reaching into Ronald Reagan's pocket was one of the worst things that you could do. And he started to blame government and big government for taking advantage of the working man, him, the working man. There's a little irony in that. But that also started to push his politics to the right, and you know by the time Richard Nixon really embedded himself as the vice president and Eisenhower came to power, the transformation was complete.
And how much did the management of General Electric have to do with that transition?
I think it had a good deal to do with it. You know, it's funny, Reagan had been the president of a union, and here he was talking. He was actually made an ambassador of General Electric. He would go to the plants. There are huge plants in all the major cities, and his job was really to walk out among the plants and to talk to the factory workers and to see what was going on and to see what was in their mind. And this really politicized him in a huge way. He listened to their stories. He empathized with them. And the struggles of the working man, which had always been a democratic ideal, started to become a Republican ideal. It was almost, you know, big government reaching into your pocket again. People were stretched, and Reagan felt for them. And again, this pushed him further to the right. So that by the time he was done with his work at General Electric and prepared to go into politics, Reagan had abandoned the Democratic Party and was now a Republican.
And how much of his move into politics had to do with his dying career as an actor?
Well, you know, it coincided with it. The book opens up. My book opens up in
that's
a whole
such a great
place.
Scene.
Lot,
yeah. I love that.
Yes, thank you. It's Las Vegas in 1954, and Reagan's career as an actor has tanked, and so he's wound up in Las Vegas as the MC of a corny casino show, and. He's miserable, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. And by the time he's done with that, He has an offer for TV, more TV work, which he's not really done before, and he's starting to lean to politics. And, yeah, sure, by the end of his Hollywood career, I think he had really enjoyed what he had done as the union president, as the president of the Screen Actors Guild, and he felt that he had some leadership abilities, and he started to look towards politics.
You're listening to From the Bookshelf on KSCO. I'm Gary Shapiro, and we're talking this week with Bob Spitz. He's the author of a new book about Ronald Reagan called Reagan, An American Journey. He's also written great biographies of Julia Child and the Beatles and Bob Dylan, and also a charming memoir. Let's talk about his acting career a little bit. He came to Hollywood fresh from being a radio personality.
He was a big radio personality. As a matter of fact, at one point, Reagan was known as the voice of the Midwest, and people in eight states listened to him every night. I think a lot of people understand that he was a baseball commentator, that he did the Cubs and the White Sox games, and that's true. But he also interviewed every major personality that came through the Midwest. People like Amy Semple McPherson and Gene Autry, so that he was kind of a well-known star as a broadcaster.
Do recordings exist of those broadcasts?
Unfortunately not. Unfortunately not. And we only have to take Reagan at his own word for what happened. But actually, there were people I spoke to who actually had heard him and knew of his recording, and I could really rely on a lot of eyewitness accounts in the book. But it seemed almost a natural gravitation for him to head to Hollywood. And I think he'd always had his sights set on Hollywood. He had acted when he was in college. He actually had acted with his mother and father when he was doing community shows when he was a boy in Dixon, Illinois. And so in the golden age of Hollywood in 1936, Ronald Reagan winds up on the big screen, and it was kind of like the pinnacle of his dream.
You know, he was not a terrible actor, but he didn't have a lot of depth as an actor. Would you say that's true?
Oh, I would say that's true. I think every reviewer would say it's true as well. He, you know, what he could do was he had perfect memory, and he could really memorize his lines so that he never missed a cue. He was reliable. He had a good face, something that Jack Warner really liked, and Jack Warner really had pegged Ronald Reagan to be a big star, but directors didn't buy it because, as you said, he was, you know, he lacked a certain depth. Ronald Reagan, and especially as president, was not a reflective man, and that really shows up when you're trying to act as well. He only would go so deep, and I think that's really what made him a B actor as opposed to an A-list actor.
Do you think, and, you know, of course it's crazy to always do these what-ifs kinds of things, but do you think that if he had training as an actor from, you know, a good acting coach, that he might have developed into a better actor?
Perhaps, but I just don't think he had it in him. You know, there was a very famous biography of Ronald Reagan by Edmund Morris called Dutch, in which Morris had complete access to the president and came away from it not knowing anything more about him than when he went into it. And I've read the interviews that Morris did with Reagan, and he just can't plumb any further. Reagan never dove deeply. So I don't know if a drama coach would have helped him. I think there were a lot of things in his boyhood that happened to him where he just blocked out a certain quality of digging deeply and thinking too deep about emotions. He was not an emotional guy, and I think without those emotions, you can't really develop into a quality actor.
If you were a young actor today, you could play Superman, he'd be perfect.
Yeah, exactly right. And in fact, in the early days, he played a kind of a super FBI man named Buzz Bancroft in a series of five movies. And he was terrific in them. That's what he was made to do.
His first picture is a funny picture where he's a radio announcer involved in a crime. But he does some great scenes with some little kids where he's calling as though he's the voice of the Midwest, calling
right.
their derby or whatever it is they're doing.
It was typecasting for him, and I think that's what really helped seal the deal for his acting career. He knew that role and he knew how to play it.
I really enjoyed your description of his relationship with his first wife, Jane Wyman. She just wanted him to stop talking.
She did. Actually, this is the time where Reagan becomes obsessed with politics. It's in the early days. Actually, he had always been obsessed with politics, but in Hollywood, he really gave voice to it. And on the set of every movie, he was a complete chatterbox when they broke for, a little rehearsal between takes. Reagan would start pontificating about politics, and actors started to move away from him. In fact, a couple people told me that during lunch breaks, they waited to see where Reagan would sit in the commissary before they sat down because they didn't want to get an earful of politics for an hour and a half. And that's what Jane Wyman couldn't deal with. She just wanted him to keep quiet for a little. She wanted some peace and quiet in her life. And it broke Reagan's heart. He really loved that woman. He loved being her husband and loved being the family man that that he had become, but Jane couldn't deal with it.
So, I mean, I believe Ronald Reagan is the first successful politician who had ever been divorced.
I think you're probably right. I never really gave that much thought, but that's true. And funny enough, it never became an issue in the election at all. I don't think anyone ever raised that that question. And, of course, Jane Wyman never, ever spoke about her relationship with Ronald Reagan again.
She was, of course, alive and well for a long period of his, right? I mean,
absolutely. In fact, I think she lived as long as he had, so... she really decided that she was not going to trash him in any way. And I think she respected Reagan in a lot of ways, and that the end of the relationship was also a tragedy for her as well.
Well, she was a fine actress, an Oscar-winning performer, and she had a long career, and she was definitely, kind of her own person. What about Nancy Davis?
Well, she had a different kind of career. like Reagan, she did not have a lot of depth as an actress, but she, as a person, she had enormous poise and was well-liked in Hollywood. She was, she knew her way around. She knew a lot. She was very close with a lot of the top stars like Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, Clark Gable. She knew the heads of the studios. She had grown up around them. Her father, a doctor, her stepfather, took care of a lot of them. She had always earmarked herself for a Hollywood career. Her mother had been a stage actress and quite successful. But it was not in the cards for her. She, like Reagan, just didn't have what it took to become a big star. And when she married Ronald Reagan, she realized that perhaps her best role was as wife. And as history would have it, she was absolutely right.
But you say in your book that she was a little disturbed when he turned to politics. She thought she'd married a movie star.
She had, yeah. I think Nancy Reagan would have been really happy staying in Hollywood. She had, you know, she had a kind of a very close social circle there among the very rich, you know, the Bloomingdales and people like that, the Annenbergs. They were all part of her social circle. And she maintained that even when they went to Hollywood. She loved living in Hollywood. And so when she all of a sudden found herself in Sacramento as the wife of the governor, she felt completely alien and had to really struggle with that. But I think by the time they got to Washington and Nancy Reagan herself got involved in politics as the wife of the president, she had found her niche. And I will say it's fair to tell you this because we've talked in the past about other books. When I set out to write the Beatles book, I felt that I knew who the boogeyman was in the story. It was Yoko Ono. And I was completely wrong. In fact, Yoko Ono really, I felt in the end, had kept John alive. And without her, he might have died by his own hand much sooner. And when I began this book, I thought, oh, I know the boogeyman in this book as well, the Yoko Ono character, it's Nancy Reagan. And I was completely wrong again. In fact, I felt that Nancy Reagan's role as the wife of the president was quite remarkable in a way, and in a way that I hadn't anticipated.
But she certainly has her detractors. I mean, she was, as first lady, she relied heavily on astrology. Or, I mean, unless that's not true, but it does appear in your book that she
Oh, no, she did. Yeah. No, look, she was aloof. She was imperious. She did not know how to get along with the press. And all of those things really set the tone for how we perceived Nancy Reagan. But if you read in the book, behind the scenes, Nancy Reagan had a sharp mind, really supported her husband in a lot of ways, bailed him out of a lot of situations. And really, we have her to thank for much of Reagan's dealings with Mikhail Gorbachev in the future.
Reagan was a guy who didn't change his... It's interesting because he's a guy who completely flipped on his political perspectives in his life, but by the time he became governor through the rest of his political career, he didn't change his mind about many things. He was really kind of inflexible.
Yeah, no, he was set in his ways. He really was. Even when people would prove him wrong about something, he would stick to his guns about certain subjects. And that's one of the things that I think worked against him. He also listened to experts. He was also influenced greatly, more than anything, and this will kind of amaze you, by Reader's Digest. Nancy Reagan, I will say, granted me access to the president's private papers. These are not the papers that are in the Reagan Library, but rather those that were in his desk and in his files as a governor at home and in the Oval Office. And I was one of the first people to have access to these papers. And I found that the majority of them were Reader's Digest articles dating back to the 1940s that he had underlined and annotated, and many of his policies were formulated on what he read in Reader's Digest. And I found that truly extraordinary and amusing.
Not unlike someone watching Fox News and basing their political views on what they say on the television.
Well, that's one way you could look at it. Yes, absolutely. Believe it or not, I feel that there was much more substance in the Reader's Digest than what you might find on Fox News.
I agree. I'm sure there was. I mean, Reader's Digest drew from a wide variety of things. But he was also interested in some very fringy kinds of ideas at the same time, correct?
Correct. His campaign manager in the early elections told me that Reagan had confided to him in a personal moment that he believed that aliens had occasionally landed in America. And he said to his manager, in fact, I think there are some that are among us right now. You know, he read actively as a boy, and he read a lot of science fiction. And I think there were times that things got blurry for him, and he wasn't sure, you know, what was fact or fiction anymore. He was a really fascinating guy. There were so many different facets of Reagan that came to me in this book that I had never heard before, and I found them, you know, the makeup of a very unique man.
I'm Gary Shapiro. You're listening to From the Bookshelf on KSCO, and we're talking this week with Bob Spitz. He's the author of a new biography of Ronald Reagan called Reagan, An American Journey. Well, of course, he eventually was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Were you able to trace back earlier indications that he had Alzheimer's, even when he was still president?
You know, everybody has asked me this question, and in fact, I spoke to the late Howard Baker, who had became his third chief of staff. Baker told me that when he came to take that office, his advisor, James Cannon, had said to him, look, watch out for Reagan. Reagan is losing his mind. We all think that Reagan is losing his mind. So when Baker came to take the chief's job, he really did it with keeping one eye on Reagan's health. And after about a month, he said to Cannon, you've got to be out of your mind. I'm with this guy day and night. There is absolutely no sign that he's losing his mind. As a matter of fact, I could tell you that, you know, he napped during the days. He was not great with people's names. He would forget people's names. I forget people's names. But there were really no signs from Baker's perspective and from other people's that I talked to that Reagan was suffering Alzheimer's while he was in office as president. On the other hand, I will tell you that his father died of Alzheimer's, his mother had Alzheimer's, his brother Neil had Alzheimer's, and I think Reagan always knew it was on the horizon for him. I think it was undeniable. And I think of all the people, he was the least surprised when the doctor told him, and that scene is in the book, that he had Alzheimer's. I think he took it in stride.
Talk a little bit about the Teflon aspect of his presidency, as you mentioned in the book. He's the Teflon man.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know. It seemed that no matter what he did, up until Iran-Contra, those things, any gaffes slid away. And I think one of the reasons is that after Watergate, after the Vietnam War, after a succession of failed presidencies and the Iran hostage crisis, Reagan's administration was a breath of fresh air for a lot of people. He was an honest man, as far as I can tell. And he was a man with enormous charm and charisma. And I think that's what the American public wanted at that time. And so they were more than forgiving. And I think he paid them back in spades. He restored American morale in their country, in their government, and for a lot of people. I mean, there were a lot of Democrats who didn't feel that way, but there were a lot of Democrats who switched sides in those days and became Reagan Republicans. so, or Reagan Democrats, as they were called. I think that all contributed to the fact that Reagan was indeed the Teflon president. But of course, Iran-Contra changed much of that.
Although he pretty much got away with that, too.
He pretty much did, but history will prove that, and I think my book clearly shows that Ronald Reagan knew exactly what was happening in the exchange of arms for hostages.
What about his reputation as a great negotiator? And let's specifically look at Reykjavik. Do you think that he handled that exchange well?
I think Reykjavik was a kind of a turning point for him. I think it was really incumbent for a U.S. president at this point to find some way to open dialogue with the Soviet Union. For 30 years, it had been in trans. It just wasn't working whatsoever. And part of the reason was that Reagan didn't have anybody to talk to. I mean, Brezhnev, Chernenko, Andropov, they were tyrants. They were despots. But Margaret Thatcher had met Gorbachev and told Reagan confidentially, "I've met this man. We can do business with him." And so Reagan was determined, no matter what, even if they didn't agree on terms, to open up some kind of mutual dialogue with the Soviet Union through Mikhail Gorbachev. And I think if Reagan didn't accomplish anything really solid in the way of a treaty early on at, Geneva, before they met in Reykjavik, that he at least found a way to bring the Soviet Union to the table and to really put aside the theory of mutual assured destruction. Both of those men were totally opposed to that and knew that it was a horror show. And so I think I give Reagan a lot of credit for that. Did he achieve what he wanted at Reykjavik? No, he did not. He walked away from a very generous offer from the Soviet Union to destroy nuclear weapons. And he did it over Star Wars, which we knew wouldn't work, and I think he knew what wouldn't work, although he wanted to convince himself it did. So I think in that respect, as a negotiator, he did not meet his mark. But again, I think it was very important that he brought Gorbachev to the table a second time, and then he went to visit him in the Soviet Union, and Gorbachev came to the United States, and they did have an INF treaty that eliminated a lot of short-range missiles. So, you know, you have to weigh that all and sift it all, and I give Reagan a lot of credit for what he did in that respect.
Well, up until now, Bob Spitz, you haven't been a historical presidential historian, but now you are. But so, I don't know, how would you rate President Reagan among 20th century presidents?
Well, it's so tough. You know, I've read so many articles that say, one of the top 10 presidents. And I think if you're looking at someone who unified the country, I think you could give him pretty high marks. I think if you look down the pike here in 2019, you might say that his cause in division sowing the seeds of division really subtract from that rating. I don't know. Maybe I'd put him in the top 20, but not a very. I don't think there were a lot of accomplishments. Major accomplishments above his relationship with the Soviet Union and sowing the seeds that ended the Soviet Union and bringing down the Berlin Wall. I give him high marks for that.
If you seek peace, If you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
You know, during his presidency, it was a period when we first started to hear a lot from the right that there was a liberal bias in the media. And of course, the media was a lot smaller in the 1980s. But it seems to me that President Reagan got treated very, very well by the news media. What do you think?
I think he did. And I think a lot of it had to do with public relations. He was very accessible to the media. You know, he gave routine press conferences. He invited people into the Oval Office all the time, reporters, to speak with him. You know, I think he suspected the media in a lot of ways and blamed them for anything that kind of went wrong in conservative negotiations in Congress. But I think he was pretty fair with the media, and in turn, they were pretty fair with him. His press people, his spokespeople, you know, had a great. They were long-standing press people who had great relationships with the press, unlike Sarah Sanders, who had no experience dealing with the press before she took the job. So, you know, they, as you said, I think they were much more forgiving, and it will help his legacy well into the future.
So you wrote your book about Julia Child after having taken some. You went through a whole cooking. You became a cook yourself, right? A chef.
I don't know. I did, yeah.
So now are you going to become a Republican?
Oh, no, really. I mean, I don't know what it, I'll tell you the truth. I don't know what it means to be a Republican anymore these days. And I think the Republicans are having that same difficulty. Are they Reagan Republicans? They're certainly not Rockefeller Republicans. Are they Tea Party people? You know, I think they're really the future of the Republican Party right now. But I think it's fair for people to say that they've been lifelong Democrats, but have the wherewithal and an open mind and perspective to write a very fair-handed book about a Republican president. I set out to write Reagan, An American Journey, in the manner in which David McCulloch wrote about Harry Truman. And I think if you look at it, you will see that, if you read the book, you'll see that it's a fair and even-handed look at Ronald Reagan, and you can make up your own mind whether you're a Democrat or Republican afterwards. But one thing that I find, that I try to tell people is, no matter what your politics are, he led an extraordinary life. And if you like to read about someone who's led a life that includes, you know, broadcasting and Hollywood and the birth of television and politics, then that Reagan's life really can provide a terrific, compelling storyline.
When told by a excellent biographer like Bob Spitz. I enjoyed your Beatles book. I enjoyed your Julia Child book, and I really enjoyed this one, Reagan, An American Journey, by my guest Bob Spitz. Bob Spitz, thanks so much for spending some time with us again on From the Bookshelf.
Gary, as always, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you subscribe to podcasts, and you can like us on Facebook. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas and Ollie Jackson. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.